It is one of the most instantly recognizable objects in America. The shade of yellow alone, minus almost any other indicator, tells you school bus. But children who live close to school could walk or bike or ride scooters or skateboards and get some exercise on the journey if the local streets were constructed in such a way to be friendly to people on foot or human-powered wheels. The Safe Routes to Schools program works to encourage human-powered transport to school, and the program just got a boost from the Oregon legislature's big multi-billion-dollar transportation bill. The bill provides chunks of money to many different forms of transportation. Let's hear what it does for Safe Routes to Schools. Two guests with us from the Oregon Department of Transportation in the studio, Jenna Stanky-Marmon, who is with ODOT's Region 3 Active she is Region 3 Active Transportation Liaison. Jenna, good to see you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
And Amanda Peets joins us from Salem, where she is ODOT's Program Implementation and Analysis Manager. Amanda, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Jenna, let's start with you. Give us a bit of an overview, if you would, about Safe Routes to Schools and how long it's been around and its general goals.
Sure. So Safe Routes to School has several different elements, including education, encouragement, enforcement, and then also environment and infrastructure. And this particular portion of the legislation really deals with that last element, which is the infrastructure improvements. So through this legislation, that is the target, to try to fill the gaps, to close the gaps for people walking or biking to school. And sometimes that's just as simple as being able to cross a busy street, whereas other times it's, you know, doing some sidewalk infill, building some sidewalks or bike lanes to make that connection.
And how Amanda Peets, how widespread is the Safe Routes to Schools program across Oregon?
It's very widespread, and I think this is a significant win and boost for the state of Oregon. We're going to see an additional $10 million per year infused into Safe Routes to School infrastructure investments that will really help us to make a difference in closing some of those gaps and making our system safer for people walking to school.
So when you talk about gaps, are there some schools where kids really don't ride or walk to school?
Yeah, our data shows that around schools, about 29% of sidewalks are missing, or bike lanes are missing. So that was a need that we were able to explain to the legislature in order to help get this money, because people living close to school don't have any other opportunity except to get in a car and drive, and that last mile connection is critical.
So so I understand $10 million a year, you're saying. What does that money go to, Amanda?
So there'll be a competitive grant program for money for the state system and the local system that can help close those gaps. And so local jurisdictions can apply for funding to help fill those infrastructure improvements. So it's really spread across the state, identified on a high-need basis. Some of the criteria that we're looking at, but not yet finalized, include things like focusing on Title I schools, where there might be more of a low-income population and where those connections become especially important so that kids can have access to education, and thinking about areas that might be high risk for crashes and focusing on those areas first. So we're really trying to focus those dollars to the highest need locations wherever that is in the state.
So, Jenna Stanky-Marmon, help us understand, because $10 million a year sounds like great money, but the indication I get from Safe Routes to School supporters is that there's no funding for programming itself. So what does that mean?
So in Oregon, we have $500,000 annually for programming. And actually, in Jackson County, when I worked for the county, putting my county hat back on for a second, we were able to secure some of that money to do some programming in Jackson County with Medford, Central Point, and Eagle Point school districts. And basically the goal of that program is to go into the schools and see what the barriers are to walking and biking. Oftentimes it is infrastructure. And so the parents actually help you identify the specific needs that would allow their kids to walk and bike, or that would allow them to feel comfortable allowing their kids to walk and bike. And then they do programming like encouragement and education. So, and that education piece is really critical, because often, you know, we're just said, oh, you know, this is how you walk, or this is how you bike. You're handed your bike and you're just sent out without any real education about how to use our street system safely. So the education portion is typically between a week to 2 weeks, and you go out with the kids for about an hour a day and talk about traffic safety and actually go out and walk around the school and bike around the school and learn how to bike safely and use the facilities in the most safe and proper manner.
So, Amanda Peets, when the money is provided for the infrastructure but not the programming, you might have the good bike lanes and the good sidewalks, but no particular direction or instruction for how to use them?
I think the cities and counties that will, and the state that will receive this money, I think have a good sense of where those gaps and those needs are. I think what you don't get as much without bumping up the education and outreach side is how you can leverage those investments together. So I think you'll still focus it on the right areas that you would identify through a Safe Routes to School action plan from that education and outreach money. But what you're missing is the opportunity to work with students to learn how to ride a bike, for example, or create a walking school bus system where parents feel safe letting their kids walk to school because there's a group that walks together. So some of those opportunities you may not have unless we had more or additional money for the education and outreach component. So I think as a Department of Transportation, we're looking for opportunities to help enhance that program through some of our decisions, and we also invest heavily in Transportation Options Program, which also supports similar types of education and outreach activities.
So with the infrastructure, you get the good facilities, perhaps, but not a lot of work with people to make sure you get the most use out of those facilities.
Correct. That's the opportunity for leverage you get from that education and outreach dollars.
We're talking about Safe Routes to Schools programs, which will get some money from the Oregon legislature for several years into the future now with the transportation bill passed by the Oregon legislature at the beginning of July. Amanda Peets is the ODOT Program Implementation and Analysis Manager based in Salem. Jenna Stanky-Marmon, who recently moved to ODOT from working for Jackson County, is the Region 3 Active Transportation Liaison. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments about Safe Routes to Schools and other active transportation, the umbrella term for basically getting around under your own power. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. $10 million a year sounds like a lot, and I guess this does bump up to $15 million a year over time, Amanda Peets, but in any given year, how much can you actually build with that much money?
I think that's variable depending on the location that you're working on. The challenge, I think, with some of the connections we're trying to make is that just adding a sidewalk isn't just putting down cement, but it's also changing drainage, acquiring more property, so that right-of-way acquisition. And so when those things occur, the costs go up. And so we haven't measured exactly how much per year that gets us, but we do feel that if we focus investments like that, that within 10 to 15 years, we can close gaps at least within a quarter mile of schools, so that it can have a significant result, but it will take time to get there.
Okay. When we say 29% of sidewalks just not there, what are some of the other obstacles that tend to, I mean, it's obviously a big one right there, but I mean, are there other obstacles as well? Poor crossings of major streets, things like that?
Correct. That's another focus area we've talked about, our crossings, and sometimes that is the biggest need in an area. So having the infrastructure there is one thing, making sure the crossings are safe is another. So funding like this can help to support the flashing beacons that you see for crossings to alert people that there's someone waiting to cross and make sure that they're visible. So some of those kind of improvements can be made as well.
We have some contacts, some listeners we can get to here. Mike sent an email in, doesn't give a location, but he's got a problem with Medford. He says, the Medford City Council seems to despise bike and pedestrian amenities. Even the smallest amount of infrastructure seems to be balked at, especially if a precious parking spot is at risk. Many have advocated for decades to little avail. How will any of this be implemented? Again, asks Mike in Medford. Jenna Stanky-Marmon, you work in the Rogue Valley. I mean, so let's talk about implementation and how the grants are applied for and moved forward on.
So as Amanda mentioned, the local communities will determine the needs on their system and then apply in a competitive process. So Medford will be applying and competing with schools and districts and communities throughout the state. My role in, as the region active transportation liaison is to help Medford or to help other communities identify and then develop their projects so that they compete well, so that we get a good chance of getting some money to do important projects in Southern Oregon.
I know it's active transportation, but how activist can you be? I mean, can you suggest things, or is it pretty much you're taking what they're giving you and saying, here's how we can accomplish that?
I think a little of both. You know, I've been working with the communities since I started, and there's actually quite a bit of demand, as you can imagine. There's a lot of need, as Amanda mentioned, and there's a lot more interest than I think people might recognize. I think that especially with Safe Routes to School, we recognize as transportation professionals that school traffic actually accounts for 10 to 15% of the traffic in the morning commute. So from a transportation system management perspective, getting people to walk or bike or having parents allow their kids to walk or bike can really help alleviate some of the traffic congestion problems we have. So I think that there's a good recognition of that fact. And then also we're seeing, you know, the link with health and the fact that a third of our kids are overweight or obese, and really looking at ways to address that concern. I mean, I have two stepkids who happen to be of the generation that might not live as long as we are going to. So the first generation in over 200 years with a shorter lifespan. So how do we resolve those problems and think about things holistically as how we move throughout our communities and also how we use our communities?
Safe Routes to Schools, again, the discussion topic. Jenna Stanky-Marmon is with ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation, Region 3 Active Transportation Liaison. Amanda Peets is ODOT's Program Implementation and Analysis Manager based in Salem. Here's a phone call from Cynthia in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, I'm wondering if you've been made aware of the bridge over Wagner Creek on Rapp Road in Talent. And when you talk about the community, do you mean the actual city government or the school, or could citizens initiate a grant? Because that bridge has been a problem.
It scares me when I bike across
it. If it's, pardon me?
It scares me when I bike across it. You look both ways at me because there's no shoulder. There's no room there for bicycles.
There's
really
no shoulder, and people go really fast. And half the time they've got a cell phone in their hand when they're going 50 miles an hour there. Mm-hmm. And there's some confusion about whether it's actually supposed to be maintained and patrolled by the county or the city. So there's some confusion there. I'm just wondering if your program is aware of it and if the citizens could initiate something there.
And it's a good question, too, because aside from the bridge itself, I mean, it is within a mile of a couple of schools, and I wonder if that might be the kind of thing eligible for some money under this. Amanda Peets?
Yeah, I think in terms of a process to get those needs known, I suggest working most directly with the local jurisdiction. So maybe the city and the county in this case, you can get both of them aware. So suggesting going and testifying at a city council or county commission meeting and making them aware of that issue, asking for them to apply for these funds. I think generally the applications will need to come from the jurisdiction themselves, potentially the schools. So that's something still to be determined. But we want to make sure that every citizen is aware of this program and can work with those jurisdictions on making sure that those needs be known.
And are you familiar with that particular bridge,
Yeah,
Jenna?
It took me a minute. I was stuck on Suncrest Road with the Bear Creek Greenway, but now I do remember the Rapp Road concern, and I have heard about that. That is listed in Talon's Transportation System Plan, if I remember correctly, and definitely would be, you know, something that I would take Amanda's suggestion and talk with city staff about looking into that as a potential project.
Amanda, you had talked about a bit of disparity between high-income and low-income communities and the presence of sidewalks. I wonder if there's an urban-rural split as well.
Yeah, there may be as well. I think we're going to certainly look at those needs. And one thing that we consider just overall from an equity perspective is transportation disadvantaged populations. So whether that's from an income basis or in this instance, potentially a rural setting where there's not very many options available to folks except for to drive. So I think we'd certainly prioritize our investments in those areas where there are fewer options or where we have populations that may have greater needs than others.
And I wonder, too, is it really a case of if you build it, they will come? I mean, you've got this infrastructure money, $10 million a year for how many years? And then it bumps up to 15 after a few years, doesn't it, Amanda?
Right. So in 2023, it bumps up to $15 million a year, and this is out to perpetuity. So that's the great thing about these funds that the legislature have set aside, is that it does continue on out into the future. And it is something that we can leverage with other funds to make those dollars even go further. But I think for if you build it, they will come. I think we have a lot of good data that shows people's propensity to walk or bike near schools, and that's highest within a quarter mile up to a mile. And so that's really, I think, why the legislature set that parameter of a mile, because we do have good data that shows when we make connections within that area that we do find that more people bike or walk. And I think it will be variable per area how many people actually do that, but providing that opportunity does make a difference according to research.
And about a minute left here, Janice. Thank you, Marmon. I wonder if there are some success stories you can point to already in Jackson County, which you're familiar with from having worked for the county for years, of places where there have been amenities and programs put in place for safe routes to schools that have had successes.
Sure. Right here in Ashland, there's been a relatively successful program going for years, and one of the biggest components is the education piece. But that program actually led to infrastructure improvements that were identified by parents that allowed, you know, people to walk safely. I think one of the key things is going to that safe and comfortable level, so it's not necessarily the same situation on every street. So if you have a high speed and high volume road, you need to have a little bit more separation that allows people to feel safe allowing their 8-year-old to walk or bike on that roadway.
I see. Okay, so a bike lane on one street is fine, but a bike lane a little further from the traffic lanes is a little more acceptable on a big street.
Exactly. Yeah, so getting that target of getting more kids walking and biking, we really have to look at that safety and that comfort, the feeling that you get when you're out there.
Okay, Safe Routes to Schools getting some infrastructure money, although not programming money, from this big transportation bill coming out of the Oregon legislature. Not the first time we have talked about some of the amenities available through that huge transportation bill. $5.3 billion, I think the final total was, but a lot of money getting spent, some new taxes that come along with that. So we'll be discussing that a lot more on future editions of the Jefferson Exchange as well. I want to thank Amanda Peets, the Program Implementation and Analysis Manager at ODOT in Salem, and Jenna Stanky Marmon, the Region 3 Active Transportation Liaison, for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey.